or paranoia. I'm reading about how it gets transmitted. Some behavior, I must admit it. Well, who I slept with and who they slept with. Who they slept with. I think about life and immortality. What's the first thing I do if I'm HIV? I have a cry and tell my mother. Get on the phone, call my past lovers. I never thought about infecting another. The times that I said, don't bother. Was it really all that magic? The times I didn't use a prophylactic. Will my whole life have to change? Will my whole life remain the same? Sometimes it makes me want to shout. All these things too hard to think about. A day to laugh, a day to cry. A day to live and a day to die. Till I find out, I may wonder. But I'm not gonna live my life 6 feet under. Cause how am I gonna live my life if I'm positive? Is it gonna be a negative? But how am I gonna live my life if I'm positive? But how am I gonna live my life if I'm positive? Is it gonna be a negative? But how am I gonna live my life?
Around 20,000 people from around the world are currently in Toronto at the 16th International AIDS Conference. While many protesters outside the conference are raging against patents and high costs for treatment, others are demanding change from the inside. We have Nathan Ford from Doctors Without Borders on the line, who is at the conference in Toronto. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Good morning.
Nathan, could you tell us a bit about patents and how they limit accessibility of AIDS treatment?
Well, Médecins Sans Frontières started treating patients 5 years ago, and now we have around 60,000 patients on treatment in 32 countries. The reason we got started in the first place was because in 2000, there were an announcement from some generics companies to make antiretroviral medicines available for $300 a year. Now, before then, the global price for antiretroviral medicines was $10,000 a year, and it was completely impossible to contemplate being able to afford these drugs.
So $10,000 a year?
Yeah. So it all started with generic medicines production in India, but also Thailand and Brazil. Since then, there has been an increasing rolling out of patent protection across the world, which has made it much more difficult for companies to make alternative versions of these drugs. And what we see is every time a drug is a monopoly product, it remains at a very high price. But once you have market competition, the price falls. So for us, market competition, multiple sources of medicines, is really the only thing that's been effective in driving the price of drugs down.
Can you talk about an example, like on the field in Doctors Without Borders projects, where you come to difficulties with patents?
Certainly. I'm actually working in one of our HIV/AIDS programs in Thailand at the moment, and Thailand has one of the most successful scale-up of treatment programs in the developing world. They went very quickly from just a couple of thousand patients on treatment 4 years ago to 80,000 today. And they've done that because they make the drugs homegrown. They're generically produced drugs. The problem with HIV/AIDS is it's a chronic, lifelong disease. The virus mutates. We know from the West that drug resistance is an inevitability. So if you want to ensure long-term patient care, then you need a constant supply of newer medicines to overcome resistance. And we're seeing that in Thailand. But now we have to access the newer medicines. These are much more expensive. To give two examples, two drugs we've been fighting for in Thailand is one drug is called tenofovir, another is called nucalitra, and both of these drugs are unregistered, and the latter is costing around $2,200 per year. Basic treatment in Thailand costs $300 a year, so this drug is completely out of reach, and frankly, at this moment in time, we don't know what to do because there's no generic, nowhere else we can turn to, nothing else we can do except hope the company wakes up and becomes properly benevolent and reduces the price to a price we can afford.
Mm-hmm. Now, would is there any progress on that? What are the companies saying? I think.
Well, it gives you an idea of what a bind you find yourself in if the only thing you can do is plead with one company for your medicines. We've been working for over a year now to get the price of this drug down. In fact, until this AIDS conference, it was costing $3,000 per year. And for 9 months, we've been pushing them to bring the price down. They sell it in Africa for $500, so we know they can make this drug at a more affordable price. Mm-hmm. At the conference, they announced a price discount of $2,200. And what really angers me is that they've waited for a big international conference to announce a price, gain PR credit, when in fact the price is completely unaffordable for the countries that it's announcing this discount for.
Wow. Now, is there any progress in the sense of compulsory license? Can governments force these companies to allow for generic drugs to be made for these new drugs, or is that?
Well, this is the most crucial point, that making generic versions of patented medicines is nothing illegal about that. The World Trade Agreements are very, very clear that every country has the right to override patents if they're a problem, that public health should come before company profits. The issue, therefore, is not a legal one, but a political one, that countries are under intense pressure from pharmaceutical companies and their principal backing governments, notably the US government, who put a lot of trade pressure on these countries to respect patents much, much, much more than they need to do so under the World Trade Organization agreement. So it takes a great degree of political bravery, and unfortunately, most developing countries are not willing to go up against the U.S. on a single issue, and they depend on the U.S. in so many other ways.
That's interesting. So in theory, they're allowed to make generic drugs, but they don't because of pressure.
That's absolutely. According to the World Trade Organization, they recognize very, very clearly that there has to be a balance struck between the right of companies to protect their innovation and recoup their research and development investment.
Mm-hmm. That gets me on to the next point, innovation. If you think that the argument for pharmaceutical companies would be that if there are no patents and if the patents aren't respected, then they will not put money into research. Now, what do you think about that argument?
Up to a certain point, it's a perfectly acceptable argument. But the problem is, for the most part, it's been a complete smokescreen. When you consider that Africa represents 1% of global pharmaceutical sales, and Europe and the US and Canada represent about 75% of global pharmaceutical sales, you realize very quickly that the money recouped does not come from Africa and the rest of the developing world. They're making their money in the US, and I personally don't have any complaint with that. I realize there are others who need to lobby to get the price of medicines down in the US and elsewhere, but really I'm happy with a system that provides them with some return on their investment, but it's absolutely not the case if you charge a price that nobody can afford in a country, then you're not recouping any R&D investments at all. So my concern is not that companies recoup their investments or that generics are allowed to flourish. I simply don't care where the drug comes from. I just care that patients right now are not being treated because drugs are too expensive.
Mm-hmm. And what about the reduction? Because of patents, there's reduced sharing of information. Have you been involved with any of the project development partnerships, as they're called?
There is a. It's absolutely true that patents they can affect. They stifle sharing of information among academics, and I have colleagues who have voiced that as a concern. But there's also a debate about how broad patentability should be allowed. Someone said at this conference, they articulated very well that if you have a patent for black coffee and a patent for milk, should you then have a patent for white milk? And there are very many examples of patents for things which really aren't innovations. They're just newer versions of old drugs, or putting two drugs together, or putting a drug in a syrup form rather than a capsule form. And we see an extremely widespread proliferation of patents which should never have even been granted in the first place, frankly.
Okay. As you mentioned, the statistics about the 1% of global pharmaceutical sales going to Africa, gets on to the next topic of neglected diseases. What are these?
Well, neglected diseases are really diseases which have no market. One of the big problems in finding the medicines you need if you're working in the developing world is that the system as we have it today is largely drugs being researched and produced by multinationals in the West. And when they look at the world, when they set their work agenda, they're looking at that 75% market in the West. And neglected diseases are very often tropical diseases that you won't find in the West, like sleeping sickness, malaria, a whole long list, which there's no market for them, even though they affect millions of people. The millions of people that are affected are poor. You can also actually bring it back to HIV, because one problem we're facing is with HIV among children. Very, very few children are infected with HIV in the West, because prevention programs have been highly, highly effective. But in fact, worldwide, 2.3 million children are infected with HIV. And we just don't have the tools. We have no tool to diagnose HIV in children under 18 months. And we have very, very poor range of medicines for children. We very often have to use adult drugs, split them in half, mix them up, working half blind, really. And this is the problem of neglected diseases. And what the solution to that really is to get out of this for-profit, luxury good way of treating how the medicines market. We can no longer rely on a handful of the richest companies in the world to deliver the drugs we need, frankly. We need much more public and government responsibility, in my view, to make sure one of these most essential products of mankind continues to be produced according to health needs and not profit prospects.
And has there been any advance on this end? Are there countries that are role models in this, in making drugs available for their citizens? And
there are a couple of things, new dynamics compared to 5 years ago. There are a number of what you call public-private partnerships, which is a marriage of industry and academia and NGOs and government money. They all work very differently. You can't put them all in the same pot. But there's one for TB, there's one for malaria, there's one for an AIDS vaccine, and Médecins Sans Frontières contributed resources to one for tropical diseases. Of course, that's not a change in the system for me. That's very, very necessary work, but it's at the periphery of the problem, because we can't hope to have a whole new entity produced for every single disease for which there's a drug missing. There's no public-private partnership for pediatric HIV at the moment, so nobody's working to produce the diagnostics and drugs that we need. So public-private partnerships can deliver a solution up to a point, but I think what we really need is to re-ask the question more broadly: should profits be driving innovation of medicines, or should we be looking at some other mechanism to be driving innovation of these most important products?
Okay. Well, thank you for talking with us today. Did you have anything else to add? You're at the AIDS conference. Have you been to a lot of interesting conferences?
We've been working flat out here, so I can't give you a broad assessment of what's being discussed in any way. There are far too many parallel sessions, but it's my first time in Canada. It's great to be here, and I think you've been great hosts for the conference, and so far it's been a wonderful success.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Nathan Ford will be moderating a workshop today at 6:30 about tackling increased patents and higher prices.
Frage, wovon lebt der Mensch? Ja.
Wir Herren, die uns lehrt, wie man brav leben und Sünd und Missetat vermeiden kann. Zuerst müsst ihr uns was zu fressen geben, dann könnt ihr reden, damit fängt es an. Ihr, die euren Wanst und unsere Bravheit liebt, das eine wisset ein für allemal, wie ihr es immer dreht und wie es immer schiebt. Erst kommt das Fressen.